man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
What's up, everybody? I'm Bizzack, and you're listening to another episode of Who Shot Ya? How you going? How you feeling? And how you doing? Wash your hands, all right? Cough into your elbows, not your hands. A lot of people make that mistake, like me at a Target earlier, but we're recording remotely in a separate location, so I can't pass my germs onto the dope guests, not in the booth, but in separate booths across the city. Since we're all spending a lot of quality time alone, I will be asking everyone what's good and what are you watching? Because I need to know. So first up, we have film reviews editor at The Wrap, Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good and what are you watching?
Oh, Iffy, welcome back. Sort of, I guess, question mark. What's good is that I am quarantined with somebody who bakes. And so we had ricotta in the cheese that was in the fridge that was going bad. So Dave made a raspberry ricotta cake, which was breathtaking. What I'm watching, we've mainly been leaning toward the old and the somewhat escapist, which has been everything from the very horny white people drama A Summer Place on the TCM app to the Busby Berkeley musical Footlight Parade on Criterion Channel, which on the one hand is this like gorgeous, crazy musical with hundreds of girls in kaleidoscopic shapes. And then on the other hand, it's a 1933 movie with blackface and yellowface and weird race stuff in it. But, you know, the musical numbers are lovely.
I mean, I stopped when I heard the horny one, and that's the one I'm checking out. So I'm gonna ask you for the name of that one when we get done. That other little chuckle you heard was producer and film festival programmer Drea Clark. Drea, what's good and what are you watching?
Well, first off, it's so good to be talking to both of you fellows again. I've missed our sweet little team, and I can't wait until we're all in said booth together. But this I will take in the meantime, for sure. I am on, I'm past my second week of isolation as a live alone gal. And the voices I do for my cats now are very real. What is good for me is in this time, branching out of just watching movies, I remembered my favorite old movie, not a blog, but website called Video Gum, which was an offshoot of Stereo Gum, which is the music component that's still happening. And Video Gum was this amazing online movie community. And the best post, it was super snarky. It was written by this guy called Gabe Delahaye, who's so hilarious. And he did a whole series, which sprung to mind based on the movie we're talking today, called The Hunt for the Worst Movie of All Time, where he would just write these things like a recap, but sort of, demolishing said movie. He wrote one for Garden State that was one of the funniest things I ever read. Anyway, so I've been plumbing into the Video Gum archives. And on top of that, for my own viewing, above and beyond my later on staff pick, but my ass absolutely rented Emma, which I had already seen in the theater. And then I watched said rental twice because I'm a Jane Austen bitch. And I do that. I've also been thankfully getting back into my beloved terrace house. So this is the perfect time. If you're like, when am I going to be able to dig into like 300 some episodes of this Japanese reality show that's like super slow paced but weirdly addictive? Now is when. And then I rewatched Victor Victoria, which was fantastic. And James Garner's like masculine acceptance of his boyfriend girlfriend, it like loved it so much. And one of the best group viewings I've had, because I've been doing these on-screen viewings, and I highly recommend this, a film known and loved, I'm sure, by everyone, Clue is so good for us right now. Clue, it's all those movies and some solid skincare time. I'm literally doing like a mask a day. I look amazing and no one can see it, but like just glowing.
I can sense your complexion through the line.
Oh, you can. Okay, good. You sense my glow. Iffy, what about you? What's good?
I know. I've been, I will say, I
I'm probably technically this is week two of quarantine for me because the show I was working on that I was writing on in the day got real ambitious and because we shot 8 episodes and we still had 4 left to shoot. So they got real ambitious. And of course, I went to Seattle and it was completely dead. Everything I was went out there to do was canceled. So I was just hanging out in Seattle. And so I get back and they're like, OK, this thing's everything's getting, you know, clap down right now. We're going to try and shoot last Monday, Tuesday and, you know, wrap it up or no Tuesday, Wednesday. And so Monday, we're just going to be writing. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, we're just going to go because we've already kind of did the like final episodes that we were able to shoot. It kind of was like, you know, we didn't have an audience anymore. Kind of, you know, same thing everyone's doing. So this time they're like, we're racing against time. And I remember I like turned in a script and there was just no notes from the EP or anything. They're like, did you hear about the call at 3? And I was like, oh, here it comes. Here it comes. No response to anything I wrote in the script. Just, did you hear about the call? And then so we had to stop production. But we got 8 episodes out, so I was proud of that. But what I'm watching is, Alonzo and I have already talked about this on Twitter. I've been ordering a lot of stuff. I've bought a lot of Gundams. That's my like divorce purchases. I've been buying a lot of Gundam models to do, but also a bunch of Blu-rays. And there's a anime movie, Red Line, that is phenomenal. And it's made by this company, called Madhouse, and they almost went bankrupt making this film because they hand drew each frame and it was taking so long to make, but it looks gorgeous. So that's what I've been, but I've saw Beastars and now I'm working my way through Mobile Suit Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans. So
I want you to know that I Googled what Gundam was because I was so excited you kept posting about it. So my world is really expanding.
But today we're talking about The Hunt and we're taking a call from the Who Shot line. And of course, as always, we got some staff picks. So we got to go into our first segment, which is our new segment called It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, is this important? Do I care?
Can I please do this first one?
Yes. Of course.
Not to give away my it a dick answer, but you guys, sit down. Because Ethan Hawke, like many people who are, you know, holed up at home, figuring out how to keep their creative juices flowing, and then because of our surroundings are also figuring out how to incorporate the freaking coronavirus into said idea. Ethan Hawke is doing that by having an idea for a fourth of the Sunset films set during the coronavirus because he thinks it would work well within a global pandemic. He had a recent IndieWire interview where he discussed the possibility. He said he's open to it. Obviously, nothing is in the works right now. And if they were following the previous time frame for the movies was every 9 years. So the next sequel would come out in 2022, which is actually not bad timing in terms of if I was developing something. I'm just saying this is feasible to me. His pitch was, quote, wouldn't it be hysterical if the next movie was just them in isolation? If there's one person to make the world laugh about what's happening now, it's Julie Delpy. I can't imagine what she would say about this. And Linklater is such a scientist. He has something powerful to say about this. Maybe this one should be set in Italy. Just go right into the fire and Jesse and Celine are singing along with all those people on their porches. Hey guys, is this important? Do you care?
Before curfew.
That's horrible.
I'm giving you a title and everything.
That's a great title.
As premises go, I think this is a pretty smart one. Like because these movies are about kind of containing them generally within a conscribed place, and usually it's a matter of the timing. We're like, oh, you know, this train is going to leave, or we have to do whatever, and you know, just the notion of nope, we're here, we can't go anywhere, we're stuck with each other, and maybe we had a big fight before this started, but here we are, and so we gotta muddle through this. I would totally watch that movie.
I know it would, like, just the more you kind of talk about it, it does get more interesting because I could totally imagine being like, all right, in the morning, I'm out. You're not going to see me. And then the next morning is the news report where everyone has to like stay in their homes and they have to deal with it.
I think, you know, for a lot of people who are trying to wrap their heads around this via creativity, there's definitely not a lot of established franchises that could incorporate this so easily as the Sunset films, because, you know, they're really, if you boil them down, there's a lot of movement in the other ones, but you could probably just do them in one room. Like, it's two people talking over and over. And the idea of the conflict of it, also the idea of these characters having to be stuck with each other. I don't know. I'm just excited that someone is putting a positive spin on it that's not going to have some sort of military set piece and, you know, probably an alien invasion or something. Like, you know, I love a good talky, humane story.
You don't want to see a Fast 10 where they're all like trapped in a garage somewhere? Yes.
Okay, wait, no, I do.
By the way, everybody on the internet has made the Fast 10 your seatbelts joke, so don't even... Folks, stop tweeting it. It's been done.
That's an advanced itadic. Don't make the Fast 10 your seatbelts joke.
Christopher Nolan, who has directed such films as Inception, The Dark Knight Trilogy, and Memento, is very concerned about the future of movie theaters, and well, he should be. This past week, he penned a very passionate letter to the Washington Post, pleading for help in keeping movie theaters alive in the future. He calls upon Congress to consider movie theaters when reviewing applications for financial assistance. But he reaches out to the movie-going public as well to remember that movie theaters are not just about the stars, the studios, the glamour. They are also about the people working the concession stands, running the equipment, taking tickets, booking movies, selling advertising, and cleaning bathrooms in local theaters. Above all else, he asks that people remember the importance of movie theaters in everyday life, and quote, when this crisis passes, the need for collective human engagement, the need to live and love and laugh and cry together will be more powerful than ever, unquote. Is this important? Do you care?
I care.
I say yes and yes, because you know, the way we watch this movie that we're going to talk about today, The Hunt, was through the streaming services now that we can't go to theaters. And it does posit the question that if this model finds itself to be successful in light of this quarantine, is it something that people are going to try? I kind of am like on the spectrum of the no side, but honestly, the way things will shake, who knows what the industry is going to look like once we get done with all this. Everything is stopping down and moving. Things that are shot are going to be sat on. I'm so curious, but I'm curious to what y'all think, because I feel like y'all have a greater, bigger picture view of these type of things.
I think there's two parts of this that are of the important and care to me. And I think it's both with the cinema experience and with movies in general. One is, I think it is easy in times of crisis and something like this, especially with the financial element to it, to dismiss the arts or move them down in the level of importance or priority. Because, you know, when you get down to sort of food, shelter, water, which is kind of the rough concerns that are in the back of people's heads right now, those are the things that seem like almost frivolous, like, oh, I can push that aside. But I also think if you look at how everyone is getting through their days, it really showcases how much we need that. We need the escapism and the connection of storytelling. And for us, like, cinematic storytelling is a huge part of it. And doing that in a theater, in a communal space, and having, like, I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to going back to a cinema, to be, again, watching something, which I'm able to do now, but surrounded by people and the energy of it. And so that's one side of it, the sort of artistic. The other is the idea that when we think of movie houses, or even when we think of movie making, when people criticize that of like, oh, they think of the stars, you think of the big name directors, the people you know, as if like that is the only entity affected. But the people who make movies and the people who show, you know, like work at the theaters, those are just as much as like your retail worker, your hourly wage worker. And I think it's, again, it can be put in this big like Hollywood parcel, But the reality is so many people make their living with hard work of, you know, not great pay all the time. I mean, some of them get great pay, sure, but not everybody does. And you put in these insane hours and time away from your family or with the theaters, like the people who are there. Like, I don't know. I think that thinking of those two things is key in why this is important.
Yeah, Manola Dargis has a great piece in the New York Times this week about sort of missing the theater experience and you know, longing to experience it again, which I highly recommend. And I think Nolan is right. I think as soon as this thing is over, you are going to see this explosion of people like going to restaurants again and going to movie theaters again and sort of like, you know, having those moments of social connectivity. But, you know, I do worry about the long-term effects of this because I think the studios have wanted to sort of test out the idea of like, what if we had shorter theatrical windows or, you know, that kind of thing that the exhibitors are the ones who sort of said, have kind of put their foot down and said, no, you're going to cut too much into our business unless you give us like 6 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever the window is. And so now you have Universal making, you know, Emma, Invisible Man and The Hunt all available, you know, for what they call, you know, premium streaming for $20 rentals. Sony has Bloodshot and Warner's has The Way Back, which they're you're buying the movie for $20 as a digital copy. And, you know, I think the studios get more profit that way by kind of cutting out the theatrical middleman. And so we definitely sort of need to keep an eye on what's going to be happening in the next couple of years, because this it has the potential to be a really disastrous paradigm shift for theatrical entities and for those of us who love seeing movies in theaters.
Yeah, I also want to say, too, this kind of I feel like there was a little momentum in the new generation in the movie going experience because of things like MoviePass and all that, that got people going to theaters more. Like, I was surprised because the difference in, like, you know, when I went to go see Sonic versus when I went to go see The Last Fast, like, I did notice more people were at the theater, or maybe just it could have been the theater that I was going to. So I am also afraid that, because I feel like the newer generation does tend to lean on that streaming culture, that, yeah, what Alonzo's talking about might actually happen, because I'm sure the suits in the, at the top would love nothing more than to cut out the theaters and just get the money directly from the consumer.
What are you talking about? Suits never care about money. That's crazy.
They're about the art, man.
Exactly. Oh, well,
I think it's a good time for us to take a break while these suits try and get a break. But when we come back, we'll be talking about The Hunt just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Hey, everyone. It's I, John Hodgman of the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
And I, Elliot Kalin of the Flophouse podcast.
And we've made a whole new podcast, a 12-episode special mini-series called iPodius, in which we recap, discuss, and explore the very famous 1976 BBC miniseries about ancient Rome called I, Claudius. We've got incredible guests such as Gillian Jacobs, Paul F. Tompkins, as well as star of I, Claudius, Sir Patrick Stewart, and his son, non-Sir Daniel Stewart.
Don't worry, Dan. You'll get there someday.
iPodius is the name of the show. Every week from MaximumFun.org for only 12 weeks. Get them at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the virtual studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Alonzo Duralde.
Alonzo, would you mind providing us with a synopsis of The Hunt?
Oh, sure. So a group of random strangers wake up in the middle of the woods somewhere. They've all got gags locked to their heads. And one of them finds a key and another one finds a giant box. It turns out to be full of weapons. And no sooner have they picked up some weapons than they start getting picked off by an underground bunker. And it turns out that the hunted are all red state conservatives and the hunters are wealthy liberal elites. But they did not count on the presence of Betty Gilpin, who is more than the match of her captors, and things get ugly.
Yeah, I think that's a great synopsis. And I think we'll talk about the controversy surrounding this, because I feel like the controversy surrounding this kind of, like, for me, if we didn't like delay it and had this controversy, I probably would have, I think it kind of tainted my experience with it, and we'll get more into that later. But did y'all feel it was quote unquote controversial?
Well, I think that the controversy that originally came up, because this movie was meant to be released theatrically a few months ago, and then someone informed President Trump that there was a film about people hunting rednecks, and so obviously it was a big liberal conspiracy. And anyway, so it became this sort of internet uproar of people, once again, who had not seen the film, not read the script, were going off of a couple of choice quotes from the movie that had come across, which are definitely in there. But out of context, most things can sound offensive or controversial. And so it got pushed, and then now kind of, it was actually a thing that I'm like, well, if they're going to pull it for this, I don't know when there's ever going to be a time. You know, it's been released now in the way that it has. And then I'm sure every single person watching it was like, are you kidding me? Like, either you're watching it because you're hate viewing it to be inflamed because you consider yourself a deplorable. And then you're like, oh, actually, they're kind of... they're all bad, and also all like they're cartoon characters. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a heavy hitting expose of the real America. It's a cartoon come to life with, you know, explosions and deadpan. So yes, it was not controversial at all to me.
I feel like you hit it right on the head, in the sense that I feel like this movie heavy handedly did what, Get Out subtly did, which was like, and I knew from the premise right away that I was like, oh, this, based on the premise, this is gonna be, you know, more cutting towards, you know, liberals than it is towards conservatives. But that kind of was essentially my thing with the movie, is like, well, obviously for many reasons I know this couldn't happen, but like Trump's name is never said, but they also never clearly make it clear that these are conservative people. Like, it just, there's like context clues, but no one flat out uses any of the like inflammatory language. Like, it's just sprinkled throughout to where, like, if you're not really paying attention, you just might miss it. And that's kind of was my thing of like, well, if you're gonna go for it and do this idea, then kind of do it. But it seemed a little kind of pussyfooted in the way that it kind of was done. And you know, if you notice, Alonzo never said whose side the hero is on, because they never do it. And I feel like that was just a Damon Lindelofian way of letting people decide where their hero resides. Is this someone who is someone we perceive as a redneck who is actually liberal, or is it someone who is actually a conservative and just sees through all the bullshit? And that to me was like a weak take as well. Like, it just, that was the only thing, is it seems like all the takes in this movie were very just weak.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of ideas at play here that are not brought to full fruition and aren't made as interesting as they could have been. I mean, like, I'm going to go ahead and give away the twist here. We generally spoil movies on the show, and it's kind of impossible not to talk about this. But the twist is basically that what started out as a joke between wealthy liberals gets leaked, and then people on the internet become convinced that it is this like deep state QAnon type conspiracy. And when all the rich people sort of lose their jobs and lose their positions of power, they decide, well, fuck it, we're going to do it for real. And it's going to be this sort of like kind of ironic thing where this thing that didn't happen, that, you know, that these the quote unquote deplorables are being hunted down and chased or whatever, well, now we're going to do it because you thought about it. And so the idea that internet trolling sort of brings out the worst and of people and makes us believe the worst in each other, and that in so doing, it's funny, there's a movie that's about The Secret that got pushed back, but this basically this notion that like all the toxic shit that gets thrown out of the world is really sort of manifesting that to happen for real, and that's an interesting idea, and I think there was a cool movie you could make from that. But this one is so skimming the surface, and everybody is a cartoon, like you said, and so I don't think it really ever digs in as much as it might have.
Strongly disagree, gentlemen. I strongly disagree.
Let us have it.
This one tonally completely worked for me. I think it's because, like I said, I was seeing it as a cartoon, and the balance of what they were doing to indicate, you know, the sides, like we have these conservatives, and they weren't just Southern. I think that was an important designation. There's like a gun lover from Boston played by Ike Barinholtz. And so it's a range of people, and they are the kind that are like, you know, spewing all of this hatred on the internet. And then on the liberal side, you know, they're the kind of people who would have a text chain where they joke about shooting people. For me, this was a lot more about extremism than it was about being just a straight liberal or a conservative, a Republican or a Democrat. And I found that not centering our main person, pardon the pun, of having Betty Gilpin be this character who you're not really sure where her allegiances lie other than within herself, that I found it a much more like, centered, that most people don't engage either in, you know, posting in anonymous chat rooms about how people should die or posting in anonymous text chains about people should die. I think it was, to me, I just read it as like, this is the extreme on both sides and these people are terrible. And now we're just going to let them play. I appreciated that it wasn't going further and trying to make a big point because, oh my God, my eyes can only roll so many times in a day. So this was like, no, they've like set up this world. They've put these extremists in it. They're all horrible. And now we're going to watch them kill each other one by one. And the only person we're rooting for is the person that's in the middle.
True. I mean, I do appreciate the idea that, and this is a statement that comes up in various contexts, not it's never said specifically in the movie, but the notion that politics doesn't run left to right, it runs, you know, top to bottom, and how this really is more about class differences and about, you know, what access wealthy people have and you know, their sort of snobbery about, you know, education or whatever of how these other people are. Again, I endorse what this movie wants to be about. I was not as taken with the execution as you were, but I did enjoy certain facets. Betty Gilpin, I think, giving a great, great performance.
You guys, we could talk the entire rest of the time. Honestly, the main reason I was thankful to see this as a rental is, maybe you did this too, I rewound about 5 of her line readings just to watch her do it again. It's like, wow, how are you even? It was amazing.
Hillary Swank too. This, gotta say, Hillary Swank. As an action head, I had lots of thoughts of action of the action sequences, because there were so many moments that worked well, but there were also so many moments for me that kind of fell flat. I think the final fight, there were so many great sequences. I like when they jump up on the table and fight. Like when the shot of them fighting outside, but the camera is inside still.
Yes.
Loved that.
No, somewhere Russ Meyer is applauding that fight scene.
Yes. That's the scene where it's this great hand-to-hand combat of these two women, and it goes on for so long. It has very sort of like Kill Bill elements to it.
I loved it so much.
Yeah, and it feels so... I liked all of the action in it because it felt believable. I say this, it's not like a huge action movie. It's also not a horror film. I feel like I'd seen it sort of put that way. It's basically kind of just a black comedy that every once in a while a body will explode, but in a not, there's not like, tension.
Because you enter this movie thinking that the whole movie is about the hunt of all these people, when really it just comes down to this. It's almost like a revenge flick after like this second act.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's one person against all of these people. And that's the stuff I do like. Like, you know, I was getting like light, like when we had that big early aughts satire action, like Shoot 'Em Up and stuff. Like, I like, that's kind of what it you kind of feel wise kind of felt like, where it's like, it's just over the top action. But yeah, I just think it was also trying to say some things that just to me didn't land. I would have liked a cleaner action. I feel like we're like so spoiled by 8711.
I don't know what that is.
Did that
I don't know what that is.
Oh, that's the leaked in Chad Stahelski, which is the action design production company created in 1997, but they do all of the John Wick
John
films,
Wick?
Fast oh, and okay, Furious, yeah. Hobbs and Yeah. So it's those dudes, and they're real good at doing, you know, just like very kind of gritty, brutal action scenes where you get to see a lot of it instead of a lot of the cutaways. They did Atomic Blonde as well.
Sure.
So with that, and like that's kind of like my new flavor. But I still loved that final action sequence. I mean, I'll always love a girl-on-girl fight scene. I don't think we get enough of them. That's why I love movies like Atomic Blonde. That's why I love, you know, just any the Charlie's Angels movies.
May I recommend Faster Pussycat Kill Kill,
which yeah,
I think is the first of the great cinematic girl fights and still one of the greatest ones ever.
Yeah, well, Lonzo was very right to bring up Russ Meyer earlier, and also Iffy Man, is that movie going to be up your alley? I think the other thing that was so great about the finale scene is it's this interesting place where you have two actresses, Hilary Swank and Betty Gilpin, who are very highly respected for their performance, for dramatic performance, for
two-time more than Oscar comedic. Winner, Hilary Swank.
Exactly. Two-time Oscar winner, Hilary Swank. But they also are known for a certain physicality. Betty Gilpin stars in Glow, where, you know, she wrestles, right. And they did all these great things when that show started of how the women trained and did the wrestling themselves and, you know, got a very athletic approach. So it's this fight scene between women who are incredible performers who also have this athletic physical side to what they're doing. So it made it even
Glow
more believable.
Versus Million Dollar Baby.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I also think the creatives behind this are something that it made a lot of sense to me. You mentioned Damon Lindelof earlier, who, you know, co-created Lost, and there's a lot of the kind I was thinking especially of Lost, of these characters that you're in and out of moments with them and you're getting a shade of that. I like that kind of touching in and giving, like Amy freaking Madigan is in this and I was like, well, how is she in this movie? Like, and there's a whole thing, like I know exactly who she is. I know her whole thing. And that was very him. And also Craig Zobel, the director, I think maybe I had more of an appreciation for or a presumption of what he was trying to do and an ability to gloss over some of the things that might have been bumping you guys because of my love of his previous films. He had two films that played Sundance, Compliance and Z for Zachariah. And
I love both those movies. And I wish this one had dared to make me as uncomfortable as Compliance does. Like, that movie really puts you through the ringer. And this movie, I feel like, should make you feel bad, not feel bad, but to sort of think about how you have expressed your own politics in the public sphere, whether you're on the right or the left. Like, have you been dismissive? Have you been condescending? Have you been toxic on the internet? You know, I didn't feel that same sense of forced introspection the way that that a movie like Compliance makes you think about what would I do in this situation? How would I have gotten in this situation? How would I get out of it? You know, and Z for Zachariah, it's funny because somebody recently, one of the streaming services is showing an old 50s movie called The World, the Flesh, and the Devil, where there are basically three people left on Earth, and it's, you know, a white woman, a white guy, and a black guy. And I was shocked that more people didn't connect that to Z for Zachariah, which offers, you know, a similar setup. And I think would be a very disturbing movie to watch right this second, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, actually, the right this second of it is important. I do think my response to this movie, watching it in my apartment, in the world we are currently living in, I think I was maybe more grateful for it not trying to be introspective or dig into things and just giving me pure escapism. It is entirely possible if we had reviewed this when it was meant to come out a couple months ago, I would have held it to the same fire that you guys are, or wanted those things from it.
It's so funny. I feel like mine is flipped. Like if I watched it when it did come out, I would have came out. I think just this like whole controversy around it. And I try to like go into movies without that stuff in my head, but just, you know, kind of just so much. The fact that I'm sitting in my living room watching this on because the release was delayed and they dare release it this way instead of in theaters, I just was expecting it to say so much more, you know? And I feel like if I would have just went in and fresh like I would have, if it just came out normally, I would have enjoyed it so much more. But I think my brain just, I tried to turn it off, but my brain was just looking for so much more, because I love unironically Fast and Furious is one of my top movies. So like I love a good fun action romp, and you know, with a little satire on top that doesn't, you know, need to cut too deep, would have been great. But I think just my head just being in that space just really just ruined it for me. So I'm willing to take the hit to myself.
All right, well, I will vote with my current head.
All right, well, if we're ready to vote with our heads, current or not, I will say, what is our final review for The Hunt? Would you screen it, stream it, or skip it?
Although you cannot screen it right now, I would say screen it primarily for if you're looking for something as an escapist route and not wanting to dig too deep, which is what made me enjoy it so much. That said, you've just heard our whole talk about knowing whether or not that will drive you crazy. So make good decisions. I was very, very pleased and surprised and so welcome to get into this total other nonsense world and just follow Betty Gilpin. I'd follow her anywhere.
Yeah, I would say stream it, which is sort of, you know, where we are right now. But, you know, absolutely worth a look, mainly for the Betty Gilpin performance, certainly for the fight at the end. And, you know, again, I think it's one of those movies that I kind of appreciate for what it looked like they were attempting to do, more than the execution, but I at least respect the stab at it.
That's good. That's good. And for me, and I feel like also, you know, we on this show notoriously will have lots of criticisms, but still say screen it because, you know, we love cinema. But yeah, I'm also screen it. And I feel like the bonus for screen it is I feel like I wouldn't have been too in my head about these things if I was watching it on a big screen and enjoying that these big action scenes on a big screen. But yeah, obviously you're gonna have to stream it, but definitely worth a watch, worth checking out. Here's a final question I have for you. Do you think if people watch this, they would still be angry conservatives?
I don't think so. I think you would walk away realizing that, I mean, look, there are a lot of people who are professionally angry and they'll just be angry, whatever, on both sides of the spectrum. Yeah. But I think for the most part, because they're clearly, you know, like Drea said, they're presenting extreme versions of both sides and they're not really rooting for either side. I think it would get sort of a shrug of the shoulders and get on with your life.
Agreed.
I also agree with that, because one thing I kind of wanted to say, and I totally forgot until now about this, is there's always this idea that the other side is so quote unquote triggered about the things the other side says about it, but both sides are typically very self-deprecating. Like, you know, the most cutting liberal jokes are by liberals, and I feel the same tends to be for conservatives. I mean, if conservatives were afraid to laugh at themselves, then Larry the Cable Guy wouldn't be rolling in millions and millions of dollars right now. Jeff Foxworthy would be homeless. But they are both very rich, and they both have a very sold out tour of where they just make fun of themselves. So I think the same thing. I think anyone watching this would, I think for the most part, get it, unless, like I said, like I think Alonzo really nailed it. Professionally angry folks will find something to be mad about, because they always do. But we have to find something else to talk about when we go to the Who Shot line. So we'll be back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Fireside Chat on KMAX. With me in studio to take your calls is the dopest duo on the West Coast, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Hey, I'm looking for a music podcast that's insightful and thoughtful, but like also helps me discover artists and albums that I've never heard of.
Yeah, man. Sounds like you need to listen to Heat Rocks. Every week, myself and I'm Morgan Rhodes and my co-host here, Oliver Wong, talk to influential guests about a canonical album that has changed their lives.
Guests like Moby, Open Mike Eagle, talk about albums by Prince, Joni Mitchell, and so much more.
Yo, what's that show called again?
Heat Rocks, deep dives into hot records.
Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
All right, welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe, in the virtual stew. With me are
Alonso Duralde,
Drea Clark.
Now it's time to answer a call from the Who Shot line. Casey, play that call.
Hello, Uchachapad. This is Alan calling from Savannah, Georgia. I just wanted to know what you guys think is the movie that uses swearing and swear words and cussing the most elegantly. Love you guys. Have a great day.
Ooh, that's a good question. Oh my gosh.
Elegant is such a great word to use in terms of swearing, because I know what he's saying, because there's things that you're like, oh, that just seems like it was fun to say. But then there's the like well-placed curse word, and it's hard to think of it, and which is much more rare, right? Like, it's a lot easier to think of someone just trailing off with your kind of do the right thing litany of horribleness. I do have one thing that immediately came to mind, and I don't know if elegant as much as quietly intense, but did you, I'm assuming for Alonzo, this is a yes, but in the motion picture Sexy Beast, Ben Kingsley plays this gangster. And he swears the entire movie. You will hear the word cunt more than you ever heard it before in your lives. And most of the time, it is in this very intense but controlled, like, loud whisper. Which is interesting that that's how I interpret elegant. But, man, I watched it and was like, oh, I don't want to be a sociopath.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I love that movie. And Kingsley is delightfully obscene. My go-to is akin to that, in that not necessarily elegant per se, but I'd say prodigious and thoughtful in terms of not throwing them in the way where you're expecting them. And that would be Peter Capaldi in The Loop.
Oh, yes.
The way that he sort of like will turn like tickety boo into fuckety bye or whatever, you know, like he just finds these ways to like throw F bombs that are like, oh, okay, that's a new use, you know.
Yeah, yeah. My pick is kind of on that, because there's one that just immediately jumped into my brain, because it is like one of my favorite, like, most cussingest movies, and it is my just hands down favorite movie of all time, which is The Big Lebowski. Like, you know, like the way John Goodman really just punctuates, it's elegant in the sense of the creativity of it all, not necessarily in the execution. But yeah, that would be my, you know. And also just going back and listening to like the TV edit where they say find a stranger in the Alps, which
oh yeah,
which is a very different way of saying what he was actually trying to say. But
monkey fighting snakes
funnier
on this Monday to Friday plane. one of my favorite uses of the F word that I quote all the time, in the context of David Mamet's Homicide, it is a police detective played by Joe Mantegna who is talking about he's Jewish and he gets assigned to a murder case involving a high profile Jewish family. I often use this expression when gay people are letting me down, which they so often do, which is, they ain't my people, fuck them.
Thank you for that call, Alan. And thank you to everyone who's called in. The number for the Who Shot line, of course, is WSY 803-1664.
And we are taking those calls still, so you know, don't let our remoteness think that it's not a good time to leave us a message.
Yeah, yeah. If you're dying for something to do during this quarantine, smash that number and hit us with a call. I feel like we should be having a litany of calls from the Shot fam. But now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie, in theater, streaming, what have you. Alonzo, why don't you start?
So, sad news on our taping day. We lost the great American playwright Terrence McNally to complications from coronavirus. He wrote Love, Valor, Compassion, The Ritz. He wrote the books to musicals like Kiss the Spider-Woman and Ragtime. He wrote Lips Together, Teeth Apart. Like, just one of the all-time champs of the American stage. And there's a great documentary about him that we screened at Outfest a couple of years ago and is now streaming on Amazon Prime. It's called Every Act of Life. And it's just, he's had an amazing life and has done amazing work. And it's the, you know, movie is like just overflowing with the likes of, you know, Angela Lansbury and Rita Moreno and Lin-Manuel Miranda talking about like how great this guy is and how much they loved him and how important his work is. So if you are seeing the obits for Terrence McNally and didn't really know what he was about, check out this documentary. It's really lovely.
Ooh, what about you, Dre? What you got for me?
I am going to recommend a film that is directed by a recent former guest of ours, Ben Kasulke. It comes out on VOD the day this comes out. It's called Banana Split. And we premiered this film at LA Film Festival over a year ago. And it's been, you know, doing this sort of circuit. It's finally coming out. It is, and it's written or co-written and starring Hannah Marks, whom I love and I think is such a talent to watch. And then Dylan Sprouse and Leanna Liberato. And it is about it's a teenage coming of age female friendship movie, which is right up my alley. And it is about Hannah and Dylan's character dated when we're in love and passionate all through high school. They break up at the very end. And this film takes place in that summer between the end of high school and, you know, most of their classmates and themselves going to college and going their different ways. So this weird sort of limbo time. And in that time, he starts dating someone new and Hannah Marks befriends the new girlfriend and they get along in such a great, curious way that they decide to keep their friendship secret from him because it's complicated enough. And it's lovely. It's just super, it's a really fun, book smartish sort of, you know, rollicking. There's great side characters and comedic moments, but I really liked what it had to say about friendship at that age and how meaningful those connections are and how not real some of them are and how real some others are. So Banana Split by Ben Kasulke, who was on our 1917 episode and is wonderful.
Yes, yes. That was a good time. Well, you know, my staff pick is going to be that movie I told you about. It is called Red Line. It's a very fun anime. It came out in 2009. A quick synopsis is it's a death race, and there's a driver who, with his partner, has been trying to get into the Red Line race, which is supposed to be the biggest race. It's a nice sci-fi action anime. The voicing is great, and like I said, it was extremely gorgeous. Directed by Takeshi Koike, and it's the most popular racing event in the galaxy. There's a lot of cool like character designs, very beautiful anime women and monsters, and the voice cast is pretty solid as well. Definitely peep it out. It looks gorgeous. Made by Madhouse. If you're unfamiliar with Madhouse, they also did Summer Wars, The Girl Who Leapt. So Wolf Children and Hunter Hunter, Animatrix, if y'all remember when that happened, and Ninja Scroll. So that's my pick. That is, and I'm feeling good about it. I hope you feel good about it. But before you go, we got the 5-star reviews, and hold on, let me get ready to read it, because if you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it on there. Wait, hold up. There are no new reviews.
What?
So I'm gonna need some of y'all to make your quarantine activity to write us a fantastical 5-star review that's going to be fun to read on air. Please.
Yes.
Please.
Some of us are all alone and living for nothing but – Praise from strangers.
And again, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY 803-1664. Also make that your quarantine activity, call into the Who Shot line. And just a reminder that you can buy a Jumbotron on our show by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot Your Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYourPodcast, or send us an email at WhoShotYou@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.